Well, we are continuing in our series in Joshua this evening. I've had time to reflect this year, actually over the last few years. Life in your 30s is different to life in your 20s. That's profound, I know. Stay tuned for next decade's edition of that breaking news. So life in your 30s is different than life in your 20s. And really for me, it's played out in two particular ways that my wife Jillian has helped me kind of come to terms with some of the limitations that have come with being in my 30s. The first is about eating. And I love eating, and in particular, I mentioned we're going over for Thanksgiving on Wednesday. Thanksgiving is an amazing day. It's like Christmas, except it's only about food. It's so when I kind of first experienced it over there, It triggered a part of me that just wants to eat absolutely as much as I possibly can. And it's such good food. Like, you got the turkey and the stuffing and the cornbread and the green beans and the sweet potato souffle and the other, what other stuff? They got stuff with a marshmallow layer on top that I think is some kind of vegetable underneath, but it was just, when I first saw it, I remember just being like, oh. So I grabbed the biggest plate and I loaded it up, like stacked it, filled every space, sat down. And I remember the moment where everyone at the table just stopped and looked at me. And they were like, there's no way you're going to eat that. There's no way. And so I did. I ate it all. And then I went back and got another one because there were some of the things I hadn't been able to fit on the plate the first time I'd gone around. And so I went and I stacked it again and sat down. And by this point, everyone was totally dialed in on me. And I finished that plate. And then it was dessert. And for dessert for Thanksgiving, it's all kinds of pies. So there's like pumpkin pie, the main one. Chocolate chip pie is another one. Pecan pie or pecan pie, as they call it. And so I went back and I was like, well, I have to have each of these also. And so I got another plate of dessert. And the kind of the sum effect of that is that, now, granted, this was in my early 30s when I first did this, but I became kind of a legend in Jillian's family. Like, my eating quantities were like actually talked about during the year in anticipation of Thanksgiving coming around again. And so sure enough, when the next Thanksgivings came around again, I felt a certain expectation. Like, I had something to live up to. I didn't want to be the guy who ruined Thanksgiving by not eating three ginormous plates of food. And so I felt like I needed to keep doing this. And so that's where Jillian came along to me and really gently said, you're not anymore at an age where you can just eat however much you want. And so I thought about that for a bit. And then in subsequent Thanksgivings, Jillian would say things to me like, you don't have to fill every space on the plate with food. You can leave parts that aren't filled with food. And then she would say other things to me like, just because you've put food on your plate, it doesn't mean you have to eat it. And then she would say things like, you could just have one of the pies because there'll be leftovers and you could have the others tomorrow. And so Gillian tried to help me understand some of the new limitations that I needed to kind of acknowledge about my life. The other one is playing soccer. Now, I never used to really like stretching very much before I played soccer. And for the most part, I got away with it in my 20s. Now, I get injured about every second time that I play soccer. And so Gillian will ask me how soccer was, and I'll say, you know, fine, it was. And then she'll wait. And then I'll say, I hurt my knee a bit tonight. And what do you think's the first question out of her mouth? Did you stretch? And I said, no, because I'm not ready to accept that I am at a point in my life where I need to stretch prior to sport. And so, of course, she thinks I'm a complete lunatic in denial about my life. But what we're looking at tonight, it's an interesting moment in the story of Joshua. Because where Joshua has come from, in chapter 12, it lists 31 kings that Joshua has defeated as the leader of Israel. So he's had a very successful time. And if you follow the timeline, it took him between 5 to 7 years to defeat 31 kings. So he's had incredible success. And then God pulls him aside and says this in chapter 13. The Lord said to him, "You are now very old, and there are still very large areas of land to be taken over." And then God describes, this is the land that remains. And then God says to him, "As for all the inhabitants of the mountain regions from Lebanon to Misrepoth, Maim, that is all the Sidonians, I myself will drive them out before the Israelites. But be sure to allocate this land to Israel for an inheritance as I have instructed you, and divide it as an inheritance among the 9 tribes and half of the tribe of Manasseh." So what's going on here is that Joshua has experienced great success, but God has come to him and he said, "Joshua, you are too old. You cannot complete this task on your own. Joshua, you can't do everything." That's what God is saying to him. And this is a reality that we all have to face. One way or another, in one decade or another, we're facing the reality that we have limitations, that there are things that we can't do. There's not enough time, we don't have enough strength or ability, we need to face our limitations. And Joshua isn't the first person or the only person that has received this kind of message from God. In Exodus 18, Moses is leading the people, and he's trying to judge, act as the judge for every person in Israel. And Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, comes along and says, "Moses, this is crazy. You can't be the judge for every issue that's coming up in the whole nation. You need to appoint other people to help you. They can be judges as well, and only the big stuff comes to you." And the apostles, Jesus' disciples, in Acts 6 as well, they get to the point where they have the food distribution to the widows, and it's taking up so much time, and the apostles don't have time to preach the gospel. And so they come to this point of saying, "Well, we can't do everything. This is too much." So they appoint deacons, administrators, to do the food distribution so that they can preach the word. So it happens throughout the Bible, and it also happens for us, all of us. We all have a limited capacity. We can act in denial, but sooner or later, if not all the time, we face the reality that there's only so much we can do. We can't do everything. I did some research during the week, and I have come up with a diagram that shows you how much out of everything that happens in the world you can control. That's scientifically accurate. It's not much. If you think about everything that happens in the world, everything that happens in your life, the amount of what you actually can control or change or even influence is tiny. Tiny. So much of life, so much of what happens in the world is beyond our control. And so there are two responses that we can have to that. We can feel overwhelmed. We can be aware of how much is beyond our control, and we can start to feel stressed or anxious or fearful, and maybe we become paralyzed. It's like, well, what's the point? It's all too much. Or we can have another response, which is to overwork ourselves, to roll up our sleeves and say, I can do this. If I just work harder, if I just put in more effort, if I take more control, then I'll be able to push through. I'll be able to somehow break through my limitations and I'll be able to fix this or solve this. It's that kind of attitude of like, it's on me. If I don't do it, then no one will. And both of these responses can have negative consequences. Because if we get overwhelmed, then we don't end up doing anything. Everything just seems beyond our control and it's all too much and we're anxious and we're stressed and then we just end up not doing anything. But also, if we kind of have the roll up the sleeves and like, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to push through, then this also can have negative consequences. One is that we don't ask for help when we should. If it's like, it's on me, if I don't do it, you know, that kind of attitude means that we don't ask for help with things. Or the other thing that can happen is that we get burdened by it, we get worn down by it, or maybe we get bitter about it. Like, oh, I'm working so hard doing all this and no one appreciates me and everyone else is a bludger and I'm doing this. And so when we have one of those reactions to this situation, it can take us to bad places. Which is why Jesus said this to his disciples. He says, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? Jesus there is saying, yes, there's so much about life that's beyond your control, but don't worry about it. Because everything that is beyond your control is within the control of the Father in heaven. And so, don't worry. You can't change anything anyway by worrying. Trust him instead. And later, Jesus said this. He said, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now, how different is what Jesus is describing to maybe sometimes how we experience life? Do you guys know that feeling of when you're in that mode where it's like, it's all on me, I've got to do it, I got to work harder? It's that kind of do everything itis. You're in it and you feel like knotted up and you feel tense and you feel stressed. And it's like whenever you stop, your mind is spinning out of control. And it's this kind of restlessness, maybe you're not sleeping well, that when you get into that do everything kind of mode, it doesn't feel peaceful. It doesn't feel restful. It doesn't feel easy or light, which is what Jesus is saying. He's saying, hey, you can come to me with all that stuff, because the burden I will place on you isn't like that. It's not a crushing burden. Actually, when you yoke yourself to me, you'll find a way of living in which you can have rest, in which you can find peace, in which you can learn to trust me with the things that are beyond your control. So the question is, how do we find the middle ground, right, between getting overwhelmed and doing nothing and instead rolling up your sleeves and trying to do everything? Because if you're going to do anything in your life, you will experience some kind of stress. Your heart will race. You'll feel some kind of pressure. And so what Jesus is saying isn't, hey, if you follow me, your pulse will never raise above 65. He's not saying you'll never feel any kind of tension. You'll never feel any pressure. You'll never feel any. But what he's saying is you should be diligent. You should be faithful with what you do. Do it well. But you don't need to be overwhelmed. You don't need to be stressed out. You don't need to lose your peace or your rest. You can trust me. For me, I have kind of three traits that affect my life and how I lead. The first is that I like to lead. So if there's a situation in which there is not a leader, I will be like, all right, I'll do it. I'll step in. I want to lead. That happens with like school projects, uni projects. Straight away, you know, when you're in a uni group and you have this awkward moment and it's like, who's going to lead? And so I just be like, I'll lead. It's like straight in. Or we had a job interview once for Energy Australia. They did a group project. And again, but that was another layer because it was like, are they wanting us to lead or are they wanting us to be humble and not lead, like second guessing? But my instinct is always, if there's a vacuum, if no one's leading, I'll want to get in there and lead. Another instinct that I have is that I actually respond quite well to pressure. And so I tend to do things last minute because the pressure helps me. And so when I feel pressure, I actually work harder. And if you ask Jillian, become an emotional robot. So I no longer feel emotion. I just become like a pure task-driven, we'll get this done robot. And the other thing about me is that I'm quite capable. So I can do things. There's a lot of things I can do or I can learn quickly. And so when you put those three things together, what I want you to understand is that I haven't just bragged to you that I'm a natural leader and that I work hard and that I'm good at things. What I've actually just described to you are the three greatest threats to my leadership. I'm a natural leader. I want to be in control. I want to be in charge. When the going gets tough, I work. That's my instinct. Work harder. And I'm good at stuff. Put all that together, what do you think that means I have a harder time doing as a leader? Letting go, asking for help. Yeah. Yeah. So I constantly need to tell myself this. Andrew, you can't do everything. Because if my leadership is limited to me, and often if I'm trying to do everything, it's not the best version of me. It's the stressed, worn out, trying to get everything, don't have peace, not sleeping heaps well version of me. Then my impact is going to be lessened. And so for Joshua, he'd been doing really well. He'd been on a tear, success after success. And then God came along and said, Joshua, you are old. The task is big. You can't do it on your own. What I want you to do, I want you to divide the land amongst the remaining 9.5 tribes, tell them where they're supposed to go, and then let them conquer that and settle in it. So my question for you tonight is there something in your life that you are gripping onto, needing to be in control of, where you're trying to do everything as if it all rests on you in your mind? You might not have said this out loud, but The reality is you feel like if you don't do it, it's not going to happen. It's on you. And so to make it happen, you need to work harder. Is there something in your life that is actually an ongoing stress for you? A thought that can't get out of your head? A restlessness? Something that's disturbing you? Because those are the things that Jesus says, hey, why don't you hand that over to me? Doesn't mean stop doing anything. Doesn't mean don't be diligent with it. Don't be faithful with what I've asked you to do. But Jesus is saying, hey, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. In other words, if what you're trying to carry is heavy, if what you're trying to carry is hard, if it feels like too much, Jesus is saying, hey, trust me with it. Maybe let go a bit. Maybe be willing to ask for help with this. So we're going to take a moment. The band are going to come up and play a song. And I just want to encourage you in this time to think about, is there something in your life that you're trying to do everything with? And that maybe in this moment, you might take this invitation of Jesus. And just over here, we've got some post-it notes and some pens. And just write what it is on a post-it note and just stick it on the cross. If the air conditioning blows it off, it's not God rejecting it. I just want to make that clear in case that happens. God accepts it even if it ends up on the floor. But just take this opportunity because it, you know, do you know that feeling when you're holding on to something so tightly? That's where God just says, hey, trust me. Hand it over to me. Maybe be willing to ask some people for help with it. So as the band sing this song, I want to encourage you to go just write it on a little post-it note, stick it on the cross, and then we'll come back for part two. So part one was, you can't do everything. Part two is, you can do a lot with faith. So let's read from Joshua 14. Now the people of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land, and I brought him back a report according to my convictions. But my fellow Israelites who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt in fear. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So on that day Moses swore to me, 'The land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance, and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly.' Now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses, while Israel moved about in the wilderness. So here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard then that the Anakites were there and their cities were large and fortified. But the Lord helping me, I will drive them out, just as he said." Then Joshua blessed Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and gave him Hebron as his inheritance. So Hebron has belonged to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, ever since, because he followed the Lord, the God of Israel, wholeheartedly. Isn't that an interesting juxtaposition of stories? So in the first one, from chapter 13, God comes to Joshua and says, "You're old. You can't do this all yourself." Now, in chapter 14, Caleb comes to Joshua and says, "I'm old, but I can do it." So we see here that it's not about age. The issue with Joshua wasn't age. There you go. Some celebrating. But it is, it's a funny scene because Joshua and Caleb were probably about the same age. They're probably both around the 80s. And God just told Joshua, you're too old, you need some help. And Caleb is like, I'm 85, I'm as strong as ever. Put me in. I'll go take that hill country. And Joshua says, all right. And that's one of the things that I want to make sure we all get from this, is that Joshua's issue wasn't so much his age. It was that God wanted to empower people beyond him. That Joshua had his role to play, but that God was bringing them into a new stage. And that's true of us as well. There is no age limit on who God can use or when God can use someone. The main requirement that we see here from Caleb is not someone's age, it's not someone's skill, it's not someone's qualifications, it's not someone's status. The main requirement to be used by God is faith. Caleb came to Joshua and said, I was faithful 45 years ago when we first saw this land. You and I, it was Joshua and Caleb who went into the land and came back and said, there are lots of people in there and they're big, but if God's with us, we can take them. All the other spies who went came back and said, it's too much. Joshua and Caleb were the faithful ones. And now here, Caleb again, 45 years later, is saying, I still believe. If God says we can take this, we can take it. And even though I'm 85, I'm ready. So we see this also through the Bible. If you think of Noah, Moses, King David, Peter or Paul, all flawed people. All throughout the Bible we find people who were flawed, who were weak, who sinned in different ways, and yet God used them. Why? Because of their faith. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians says that actually it's God's plan to use unlikely people for his purposes. He says this, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord. And that's what Caleb was doing. He was saying, I believe, I've got faith. Put me in, Joshua, I'm ready. So our question then is, well, does skill and ability not matter at all? Well, it does still matter. If you came to Sam at the end of the service and said, Sam, put me on drums next week. And Sam said, have you played drums before? And you said, I have faith. I am full of faith that the Lord will be with me as I play drums. I have a feeling we won't see you on drums next week. I have a feeling that Sam might have more of a process for you to go through there. And so it's not that skill or diligence or aptitude or ability, it's not that that stuff doesn't matter. Because it probably would be quite distracting if we had someone on drums who had no idea what they were doing. But what God is looking for the most is someone who has faith. I remember I was at a conference one time and a guy gave an evangelistic message about, you know, Jesus and what he's done for you, and he died on the cross so you could be forgiven. You know, evangelistic message. And I've got to say, I sat there. I'm not proud of this, but I sat there and thought, this is a terrible message. Like, actually, if he was in front of a Bible college lecturer being graded on his sermon, it would have been an F. Like, his illustrations were all over the place. There's no flow to the message. It was just boom. And then he finished and he was like, so who would like to give their life to the Lord? And I sat there and went, there is no way, because no one actually understands anything he's just said. Sure enough, they poured down the aisles in response. People giving their lives to the Lord flowed down. I mean, I was blown away. Skill matters, but it's not what matters most. What God's looking for is people with faith. What God's looking for is people who will believe him and step out and act on his promises. There's a lot of stuff in the world that needs done, right? A lot of problems in our world, a lot of brokenness, relationships broken, a lot of people who don't have hope, a lot of people who are struggling their way through life and getting caught up in behaviors that are harmful to them, a lot of people who are in need of love and joy and hope. And so the question is, who is God looking for to go and meet those needs? Who is the one that God will choose to be his hands and his feet and to meet the needs that are in this world? And the answer is the person with faith, the person who will believe in God's promises, the person who will go in response to God's word. Faith is more powerful than skill. It's more powerful than ability. It's not more powerful than qualifications or experience. Faith is the most valuable commodity we could have. And faith is what God's looking for from us. Jesus says, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. And again, we hear that, knowing that a lot of what happens is out of our control. And so as much as Jesus is saying, hey, if you have faith, you can do things that you would have thought were impossible, that's still within the context of trusting him with all this giant stuff that goes on in our world that's beyond our control. But what Jesus is saying is, you actually have power within you through faith to make a difference in this world. Jillian knows a couple who started a ministry in Bangkok. And as the story goes, they were traveling to Bangkok on work, for the husband's work. And the wife, when she was there, she saw girls in poverty and in prostitution, and many of them in a bonded labor sense, in kind of sex slavery. And so this woman just felt like she had to do something about that. And so in 2004, at the age of 68, her and her husband moved to Bangkok. Didn't know the language, and one way in which age is relevant, at 68, your language learning abilities are not at their peak. So she didn't know. Jillian said she would have these really deep conversations with girls there with a Thai dictionary. So the girl would say something and she'd be like, okay, I don't know what that word was. I don't. So these long, drawn-out conversations, just because she didn't actually know the language very well. She didn't know how to cook Thai food. She didn't actually like Bangkok or being in the city. But she saw a need, and she had the faith that God could work through her to do something about it. And so they moved there. They made connections. They just went and hung out at bars, got to know the girls. They set up a group home where they could go to, and over time they invited these girls into the group home, and they gave them education, gave them a different career path, helped them get out of the situations they were in. And they've seen dozens of girls be brought out of sex slavery because this 68-year-old woman traveling through Bangkok saw a need and then said, well, I'll do something about that. I believe God will be with me if I go be his hands and his feet and deal with this situation of injustice and need. Yeah, I believe that. and so I'm going to go. So my question for you guys tonight, my question for me is, are you willing to put your hand up when you see the needs in the world? Are you willing to be Caleb who says, it doesn't matter what my age is. It doesn't matter what my qualifications are. It doesn't matter what my skills are even. I got faith that God will be with me to go do this. Because I think often we can have this kind of thought where we just always assume that there's someone better equipped, right? There's someone who's more skilled. There's someone who's had more education. There's someone who has more whatever about their personality that would fit them to do this work. And God's saying, hey, that's all fine. Education helps. Skill, ability helps. Personality fit helps. But really what I'm looking for is someone who'll put their hand up and say, I have faith that wherever I go in Jesus' name, he'll be with me, and that breakthroughs and transformations and healings in the kingdom of God will break out. That's what God's looking for. So my question for you is, what do you think God's asking you to do with faith? Maybe think about what way might you be able to step up here in the 5 p.m. service in City on a Hill? We need more leaders. We need more people who are willing to step up and say, yeah, I'll be a leader with this 5 p.m. service. I'll help make it happen. I'll lead a small group. I'll be a mentor, a discipler. I'll lead our outreach ministries. I want to lead some kind of creative work. Or outside of these walls, what need do you see in the world around you, in your families and friends? Where maybe you thought, well, there's probably someone else better equipped to deal with that. What need do you see that God is calling you to meet with faith? So again, we're going to take a moment and the band are going to come up and they're going to play a song, and I'm going to invite you to go over and I'm going to invite you to write that on a post-it and give that to God. Imagine if this room was a room of Calebs who were just like, I may be old, I may not be as educated, I may not be the best at everything. There actually may be someone out there better equipped to do this, but you know what? I have faith that God will work through me, so I'm going to go. Imagine if all of us did that. And when I look at you, I know so many ways in which you already are doing that. But let's take a moment tonight and ask God, how do you want me to step out in faith for you? What do you want me to believe? What change do you want me to believe is possible as I step out in your name and in faith that you'll be with me and you'll work through me as I go? So again, as the band plays, I want to invite you to write that down and give it to God. Pop it on the cross there. It's one of the incredible things about knowing God is that when we know God, on the one hand, knowing God means we feel acutely our smallness and our weakness and our limitations. But in that, God invites us to come to Him and actually give Him what belongs to Him and to find rest and peace in Him. But at the same time, as we acknowledge our weakness and limitedness, God actually lifts us up and says, you know what? In me, through faith in me, you can do way more than you think you can. You're way stronger than you think you are. You're way more able to face challenges and overcome them. That's the relationship that God invites us to. So I want to invite you to stand. I'm going to pray for us, and then we're going to close our time in worship together. God, we want to acknowledge who you are, that you are a great and powerful God, that you are the God who spoke all of creation into existence, and that you sustain everything each day by your word. And we acknowledge that you are the one who holds life and death in your hands. All of eternity are in your hands, God. And so we bow before you Forgive us, Lord, for where we've tried to take control of things that really belong to you. And would you help us not to be overwhelmed or abdicate our responsibility and do nothing, but to be faithful with what you give us to do, to be diligent, but at the end of the day, to be able to rest in you and find peace in you. And God, I pray for all of us here tonight that you would help us to understand how powerful you are in us through your Spirit. And God, would you use us to go out and bring hope and bring reconciliation and bring joy and bring peace to those in our world who need it. Because you're in us, God. And we believe wherever we go in your name, with you with us, that we can do far beyond anything we can imagine. So would you send us out in power? And would you use all of our experiences, Lord, to do a new thing in us?